Seems to be a lot of that.
Okay.
Ready to rock and roll.
Okay.
If it was up there a little longer, we could figure it out. And pay for it.
Did they get down safely? I didn't
know. Oh, yeah. That was, actually, watching the landing was kind of amazing.
It was a thing with parachutes.
Hey, John.
Yeah, it was. And it...
Hello.
You want that for the minutes?
Charlie, how are you?
I'm good, Charlie.
Aaron, how are you?
Okay.
Ange?
Very good.
Glad to fence.
They've been out there working hard.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put some fabric down, and I'm going to put ones and twos. So no item four or anything like that. I'm going to put ones and twos because, you know, this way I won't have the water or anything, so you can actually... walk around through
that. Sounds great.
And in the back of that, I'm also going to put some ones and twos, so I'll taper off ones and twos, right? But, you know, where the back gate is, where the double gate is, I'll taper that off with ones and twos right there, so it still looks good enough.
You talked about sloping it a little bit, right?
Well, that's what, I don't have to do that, because I'm doing the ones and twos instead. So, and we'll put fabric down also, so there's no weeds or anything that grows up between it.
Good
and we
thinking,
already got the fabric. And we still got four rolls of that fence left, too. That fence was in the back. It's 25
years. We're fine. It's finally
done. Well, Lisa's not coming, so let me call the meeting to order. I'm here. Catherine?
I am here.
Charlie Whitaker?
I am here.
Timothy? Angie?
I'm here.
Mr. Kendall? Okay. Shall we pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, are there any public comments? Nope. Okay. Approval of meeting of minutes from last week before. I don't have a copy of the minutes. Do I? Oh, yeah, maybe? Yes, okay. Yeah. We did have someone, or we had two people from the comptroller's office who we didn't have their names.
I don't know who the gentleman was at all.
No, me neither. Alicia, are you I see that on the minutes from last time we have you as a SHA, but you're a CIA, right?
Yep.
That's what I thought. Okay. So we'll make that correction. And we had that mystery person.
You want me to put in mystery person?
I don't know.
No, I'm... All kidding aside, should we put something?
Yeah, we did have someone that was here. I thought both of you were from the comptroller's office.
I was the only person from my office here.
Okay, so you don't know.
There was somebody else here from the public.
For some reason I thought he was okay.
Yeah, I don't know. My
bad.
He was talking to me, but I don't know who he was. He's not from my office, and I don't know that he's from the county. I don't think.
No,
are you referring to the last regular board meeting?
No, the last governance meeting.
Okay. Unidentified individual.
Yeah. Male. Put male. Member unidentified. Public. Yeah. Yeah. But just coming for the garbage of it. Yeah. Sorry. Bad pun. So, any other comments on the minutes? Going once. So can I have someone, Catherine? Sorry. Are you reading them now?
I make a motion we approve the minutes from the previous meeting.
With the corrections.
The corrected minutes.
Yes. And I will second that. All in favor? Okay, it's actually there should have only been two to an absence for the approval last time because Lisa wasn't here. Mm-hmm. And same for today. Is there Angie? Is there anyone on the?
There is not.
There's not. Okay. Okay. Next regular board meeting is the 26th at noon. Lisa should be back for that. She's gone through this coming Tuesday. Well, maybe not. What day are we?
Today's Tuesday.
Today's Tuesday. So next week is the 27th, but we have a board meeting on the 26th.
Monday the 26th.
So she'll probably miss that board meeting too.
Okay.
From what I gather, she said. Any administrative matters?
Nope.
Old business? So the new business. Can I reverse the order and do the cell?
Yes.
Oh. Do the cell phone?
I was going to say the same thing. Yeah.
Policy first.
Did everyone get to read it?
Yeah.
The draft policy?
Yeah.
Is there an agenda with the...
Oh. Did we not have an extra copy?
There's no resolution.
There's no resolutions. We'll just make a recommendation.
Right. Whatever you're reading is the draft.
Okay. We're going to make a recommendation on this for the next board meeting. So I'm going to suggest some changes.
Under the open meetings law, items for discussion are to be available to the public.
Okay. Well, we need another copy of this. Of course, I can't do anything. Okay, thank you. I can't do any. Do you need a copy too, Alicia?
I'd love one.
Okay, would you make...
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Tim, would you make two copies?
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sorry, you don't know how much you use your non-dominant hand.
I know. Oh, I can't imagine.
I can't get out of my car. I have to, reach across. You should see me.
You really do take it for granted.
Yeah.
Once you're bandaged up, and then you have to... Simple things.
Simple things, like putting something to put into my hair. I went, wait, I can't do that. It's like, trying to get Logan into his seatbelt this morning. He was having an issue with it. And so I try. You have to sit on the other side so I can do it.
Well.
Yeah. Anyway.
Tried breaking both legs.
I know. That was...
I got really strong arms, though. I tried zooming around in a wheelchair all the time.
I cannot... Boy, I have very weak upper body since they killed all my muscles. Okay.
So we did have a memo with regards to cell phone use, and we have signs all over the property that you're not supposed to use your cell phone on the property for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to, formalize an actual cell phone policy so that we have something more than just signs that's approved by the board, which is where this came from. We had Ron Coons, who drafted the other policies for us, draft this one as well. Does anyone have any questions?
Yeah,
on
I do. I have.
We certainly could make edits to it as well. So.
I think we do need to edit.
I agree.
And my biggest thing is, regardless of the circumstances, if you are in a vehicle,
mm-hmm.
even hands free, it's not hands free,
mm-hmm.
and it's not. it's not especially here, you need to be able to focus on the trucks and the traffic and the people, that I think that there should be no cell phone use except for in emergencies.
Correct. And that's what we strive for with trying to put up the signs and everything.
Yeah. But this policy, as written, allows for hands-free in vehicles. And I think.
Well, listen, I'm just as distracted hands free as I am with a phone.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
You're so busy thinking about what you're talking about and what the person's saying, you're not paying attention.
Yeah, and I think that with the vehicle traffic, we have a pretty good safety record.
And Joanne, just to touch on that a little bit, you know, that's exactly why they have pullover spots now on the freeway where you can text and use your cell phone, because the Bluetooth stuff doesn't work. It may prevent a ticket, but it doesn't prevent an accident.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing. So the other thing I have is, you know, when we start talking about, you know, here with the cell phone use as far as excessively, well, it's a union shop, you know what I mean? So that's open to, you know, somebody saying, well, what's excessive? And so, you know, there should be no cell phone use. Every place has a phone. Uh-huh. And if there's an emergency, you know, there was a time where, you know, you call the main office, they get a hold of them, but we all have radios, and it's like, give your house a call. There's something going on. Mm-hmm. So I get it, right? So smartphones are everything. They're calculators, they're notebooks, right? But, you know, and that stuff is all good, but we abuse that stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that when you're at work, you're at work. And there should be, you know, no use of cell phones. It should be either kept in your locker or kept in your car. And on your break time, certainly you can go out and use it and look at TikTok or whatever you're doing, you know, but I think work is work.
I mean, I think that we can make exceptions if you have child care issues or a sick.
And I think that should be discussed with the management to make them aware of that kind of stuff.
So that type of thing, you know, that leeway needs to be put in there.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. I don't think that we have a reasonable place, and I don't think that that is ever an issue because I've dealt with it. We have a lot of single moms here. And I have dealt with that before, and I use discretion.
Single fathers also, or fathers
single,
also.
Single dad too. But here we don't have single dads right now that I know of.
We have dads. Dads. You know, they might be called upon their parents.
But the babysitting issue is mostly when you got one parent and they have nobody, the other parent not watching.
Both parents could be working. You know, I mean, there are a whole bunch of things. So I would just say parent.
Okay, so here's the thing. So I think that if there's an issue with babysitting, you know, hey, Charlie, why are you on the phone? Well, I was talking to my babysitter. That's fine, you know. But there are people that aren't, what are you on the phone for? Well, you know, you shouldn't be doing that, you know. So let's not, you know, so let's keep her on the ball. And the ball is a safety. We don't want somebody getting killed because somebody's saying, but, you know, somebody's lying about it, too. And you don't want to call somebody a liar. So I think we lived in a world without phone calls or using our phone all the time. And I think that world still exists at some point in time. And I think that if you communicate with your manager, I think we're reasonable. Yeah. We are a very reasonable place.
So my whole thing with this policy, I would like to put, you know, safety first, you know, as prominent as possible, right? And then the fact that, you know, reasonable is
reasonable discretion, certainly does apply.
So I made a couple of notes already, crossing out the hands-free stuff. But when I do the second draft, I'll just highlight what I changed. And send it out to everybody, so we have a final version.
Yeah, this also is, you know, the guys who are, you know, transporting the wastewater and the waste out to Seneca. Yeah,
you can't get to some places where you can't get through on the radio. Hardenburg, you can't get through anywhere. Yeah. Forget about it. Radio, cell phones. If you break down in Hardenburg, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So, I got to tell you, you know, we really don't have a problem. You know, a bad employee is a bad employee. And it really isn't just a cell phone issue with them. The cell phone issue with bad employees is that and many other things. Uh-huh. But in general, with all of our employees, everybody out there, you know what I mean? We really don't have a problem with cell phones, right, Tim? I mean,
not really. There's customers, you know what I mean? We have to speak to them. You know, they're backing up their vehicle into the transfer station on the phone, or they're putting their dumper up.
Well, I'm talking about employees.
This actually goes for everybody.
Yes.
And
correct.
I actually think that you should put board members in here.
Because
you have board members left off of this. You know, everybody. You know, all people on site. Right? We shouldn't.
I'll add something.
And can I ask a clarifying question also? Because when we have educational tours and things like that, we typically encourage people to take photos as you know, when it's safe to do so. And one of the things I always say is just don't be one of these people walking through life through your phone. You know, stay conscious of your surroundings and the flow of traffic and things like that. But this policy...
That's actually an interesting and a good point.
Yeah, so would we still be permitted to encourage
the use of camera, other video, or audio recording capable devices on agency premises is prohibited without the express prior permission of upper management and of the person subject to the recording.
And your upper management.
So people like to take their photos. They like their group photos of their tour and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That seems pretty.
And I think it's really interesting too. So I think that that's a good exception. You know, we'll let the press take pictures.
And you have the safety sheet you hand out too. Is there a reference to the pictures on that?
Yes, we do disclose that. You know, feel free to take photos. We give that verbal instruction, to be aware of your surroundings. And we ask them to tag us in the photos if they share them on social media so we can keep sharing their story and their experience here. But it's not required that they do that. Sometimes they'll email them to us too.
Uh-huh.
So that works.
Yeah. And I think that sort of is within the parameter. But I think that, people should be, safety first.
Yes.
Yeah. As I say that, my phone is on because my daughter is having an issue with her ex. And was going to the police.
Aye, aye, aye.
Well, this policy isn't in effect yet anyway.
I know. But I just realized that I had my phone, in case she texts and I would have to step out.
No worries.
Okay.
So I'll make those changes. And
okay. Are there any other changes?
If anyone has any other tweaks, between now and Monday, let me know.
Yeah, I think that instead of just employee acknowledgement, mm-hmm. it should be, signed by all.
Employee, employer, or agency? You think?
Yeah.
You mean reply, add? Yeah. Like you said, add.
Add
the
board. Yeah, and. We all should be aware. It's sort of, everybody has to do a sexual harassment training at Marist. Everybody needs to do this type of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have to do violence training too.
Violence?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. For the planning board.
Yeah. Hmm. Anything, any other comments? Anyone on this?
Mm-mm.
Charlie, you
have? Well, Tim and I had gone over this. I was concerned when a certain employee most recently was given Tim a ration of shit, okay, and you stood by and accepted it. I think I've read through the personnel policy, and there is something that speaks to abusive employees, okay? But I'm not sure it's strong enough. It might be something that you might want to look at so that you don't have to stand by and take that kind of abuse.
Okay, that's another issue.
Well, yeah, I just thought...
Okay.
Since the policy is open... While it's open, if there was something that he wanted to add to it, that might be something that we want to consider.
You always have the option of calling the police.
Well, I know that.
And we have done that.
No, and I know that, and I appreciate that. But maybe if it's in their policy, they'll think twice before they do anything. I was thinking in terms of consensus letters of consent,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that most of these things you're talking about are ex-employees, and there's no regard for your personnel policy at that point. So that's,
All right. Just
I'm just saying. Because if they don't care, they're ex-employees, so they don't care within the personnel policy. Should it be in there? It probably should be, but and if they were a reasonable person, they should take it into consideration. They're ex-employees.
Whatever it's worth, if you want to add something to it.
Yeah, I think so.
I would call it standards of conduct, and it.
I was thinking about Donnie Markle and the baloney that he gave him.
Yeah. But I think it's standards of conduct, and that is for everyone on property.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but I think that brought it to a head.
Yeah. Pub.
We tell, you know, whenever we have an outburst, you know, I tell the folks out in the yard, and we have a lot of them. There's a lot of unhappy customers that got to pay for tarp charges and air conditioners, and if we take the Freon out, then we still have to pay for it, so they become really unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
And we tell everybody, and Tim's heard me say it 1,000 times, when they go low, you stay high. You know, don't lower yourself down to the, you know, to what they're doing. So, you know, there's a professionalism that's required on all employees, and they have to behave.
I think
so
we try to de-escalate.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, you never know what people have going on that day, too.
And we just had a meeting, so it was Tim, I, and Larry. We just had a meeting. We were kind of like looking at all the employees as far as the way they conduct themselves. And I got to tell you, right, it was all good. I mean, we have some employees that are on the front lines right in the scale houses, and they really, really know how to de-escalate some of the folks.
Mm-hmm.
They're really good at it. So we're fortunate for that. Good. So I'm real happy about that.
Great. Thank you. Sorry, that is not my daughter. That is a dog. It makes my grandson smile.
I haven't been communicating with my cat enough, I can tell.
Now, when it rings, it quacks, which is really hard because we live above the roundout, and so you can hear the ducks from down there, and I'm always going, is it my phone or the real thing? Yeah. Anyway. Compost
mm-hmm.
program.
Yeah.
Next on our agenda.
Yeah, we from the last time that we met, I know Tom had sent out, everybody got his email with some suggestions on that as well. We had discussed about putting some volume out to bid, which I think the consensus was not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to do that. I wanted to make sure everyone was agreeable with the delivery list of the people that we could post to our site, like Onondaga does,
uh-huh.
With the list of delivery options, the legal disclaimers.
Yeah, we have to have a
Kennel have to review.
Yeah, with a disclaimer.
One of the things.
And can I just add a disclaimer and a process to get added that needs to be really clear, so anybody who wants to get added to it knows how to do it.
Yep. I did. Charlie and I both spoke at length with Greg, who used to run the Onondaga site, because one of the items I wanted to make sure of was the bulk sale, you know, the resale on bulk sales, and I was worried about a potential sales tax issue there, and there is not. The only time we might have to deal with sales tax is if we end up selling the bags from here. I'd prefer not to do that. I would rather, you know, come up with agreements with local businesses, like say Adams or Tractor Supply, and, you know, and sell them by the pallet or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And in which case you get agreements between us and them, and you get resale certificates. So they would be the ones that actually collect sales tax, because you cannot collect sales tax twice.
No, you can't. And there's, but when we sell it here.
Well, that's what we got to decide what we want to do as an agency as a whole, if we want to sell bags here or not.
Yeah, Greg also said not to bag too much up, you know, I mean, so don't do like 40 pallets of bag material. You know?
Yeah.
He also said he limited that. They learned to limit the amount of compost that they, you know, that they bagged up simply because they didn't, you know, because of moisture and the mold and stuff like that.
Which we just, you know, we did some test bags, right, Ange? You know, because we've got to figure out. We might end up letting the bag stuff sit longer so that it dries out, so that when we do bag it, we won't have as much of a moisture issue as well. But that's something we have to figure out through trial and error.
Okay.
But after we figure all that out, we decide that we are going to start selling it. At some point, we're going to have to establish, do we want to sell it here? And I got to figure out how exactly we're going to go about that.
Yeah.
So
I went on to County Compost, I think that's the name of it.
Community
Compost, because they sell some stuff from their site, and they also sell it to major distributors.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so we can follow their type of model, too.
And Onondaga, we can also speak to. They do the same thing. They they have some type of an agreement, I think, with the county to where the county ends up handling the sales tax collection side of things. We didn't get into specifics with them.
But that would be something that we would have to do because New York State sales.
Right. Taxes. Somebody has to forward it along, but somehow the county was handling it for them.
Sorry. Okay. Okay. I'm gonna.
What was the cell phone policy?
It's not there yet, but now, so let's move on about Jeff Bezos.
Can we backtrack for a second? We were talking about the website and what we're going to put on there, the compost, people who would deliver it from here, and what about other sources of purchasing compost?
That's already up there, right? We have that up there with when the DEC put out their list.
Like custom compost, community compost.
Yeah. So we have a contact list a master contact list for food waste management services. That lists any other composting sites in the county, food scrap drop-off programs for residents, resources to learn more about the laws, to get involved in activism, education, consulting. It doesn't expressly say compost sales occur here. But the composting facilities are listed on that resource. And then we also have a list of all of the haulers that are permitted with us.
For garbage,
or recycling. And any haulers that pick up food waste for the purpose of composting, they're also listed on this master list. So currently, no, there is no list of where other locations where people could purchase compost, because that would include every garden center in Ulster County, every home improvement store, every big box store, every greenhouse. That would be a very long list to put together. Not saying we're not up for it, but, updating that, it would be a very minimal list because updating the hours and the contact information and the addresses of all those places would be a little involved. You could also Google all that information, but we'll do whatever it takes to satisfy the board and what you want to do.
And we can forward along the link that we're talking about on our page. At least you can take a look at it and see how you react to it, maybe. It's a good test run.
Okay, so if Joe or Jane Public came on and wanted to buy a couple bags, walk me through the process, would you please?
Well, right now we don't. If when we do start selling bags, we'd put it probably under the same section as our bulk sale compost.
Okay.
Maybe when we get to that point, we can highlight it more, the difference between the bulk sales and the bag sales.
But before we do that, we have to find out from the county how we're going to handle the
I think that's more of a matter of us deciding what we want to do, if we want to sell bags here or just strictly sell them out, through somebody.
I would also have a clarifying question, too. If we do decide to promote all the options for where to buy compost, as I just described, that would... Yeah, I'd be most comfortable including all those other retail locations.
Yeah.
But where to also draw the line as far as distance? Like, Dutchess County is close, but would we include that, in that direction or other neighbors? You kind of get into a gray area, and that's why I think we've never done this in the past, because there's a fear of leaving someone out, which we wouldn't want to do. But really having to go out of the way to track these places down, identify them, get all the right contact information. So, that's another ball in the
We'll have to inquire about how others have done that.
Yeah.
I should always go back to Onondaga and see what they did.
Yeah.
Because they had to make a decision somehow.
Yeah, I would say that we preference Ulster County.
Sure, I would say so.
And then, we could say something along the lines, other counties have
recycling coordinators.
Yeah, or compost, sales.
Mm-hmm. Or you could just pick, your Lowe's, your Home Depot's, your Adams, your Agway's and stuff like that, and just visit the places and talk to the folks.
Yeah.
And
they may not want to sell it, too.
Sure. Yeah. So,
I think that might be a little bit more personal if you do it that way. Listen, Ulster County's not like Westchester County. We're not that big, you know. So, you know, you got one Adams, you know, you got one Home Depot, you got one Lowe's. So it's not that big of a deal.
No, we have two Lowe's.
Two Lowe's, you're right. We do. One of New Paul's.
There are also garden centers, farm stands, CSAs. I mean, it sounds like a simple thing, Charlie, but to make sure we don't leave anyone out would actually.
Yeah. We're not going to be doing a mass production of bags either. What was this, Charlie?
That's bag garden soil and bag topsoil.
Mm-hmm.
And the prices for the garden soil was $4.67 for 1.5 cubic feet. And they measure it by volume and put it in a bag, and that's what they stamp on the bag, is 1.5 cubic feet, or 3/4 of a cubic foot.
We are not selling soil.
We're not,
Soil compost has a completely different meaning.
Correct.
So does dirt.
Well, I'm saying the process, how you bag it and sell it. You know, I'm not saying...
That's a different product.
Do we stick to compost products? Exclusively the definition of compost, or would we include mulch, topsoil? See, there's a lot of questions.
I would actually just, we are not doing
stone,
mulch,
gravel,
etc.
Other landscaping amendments.
Right.
Yeah, no, I think we are just doing compost, and maybe a definition of compost.
You know, you might just want to keep it simple, too. Tim and I talked about it, and I think Angie was in on it with us, too. You know, we do every Saturday, we have an e-waste collection, you know. Put a pallet of bags there, and folks that want to come in, they can pre-pay.
You'd have to do. The concept came when Angie found the rain barrel and the compost bin sale.
Uh huh.
And we didn't sell them. We helped advertise and provided basically the event in the area. But they created a website to where people could pre-order and pay for it straight through that site.
Uh huh.
So that way, if our people were dispersing it on that day, they just need, you know, like a receipt that it was paid for and purchased. Just to keep the.
Yeah.
I don't want them having holding a credit card machine or handling cash out there.
They would just hand over bags. Everything would be done through the office.
And pay for everything ahead of time.
Right.
So they'd have like a confirmation number. So like Joanne, you would pull up. Geo's out there, and you'd be like, my confirmation was 76530.
And he'd have the list.
Yeah, and Geo would have the list, he would check you off and give you your bag. Or your two bags, whatever you prepare.
Yeah.
But that would just be a matter of setting up some, you know, software or whatever, like a point of sale software on our website, which I'd like to get to at some point anyway for paying invoices and all that.
Yeah, so then it brings me back to two issues. One would be sales tax. You'd have to collect sales tax on that.
And I would just, honestly, I would just create a price that includes the sales tax and do it that way.
But you still have to separate it out.
Yep.
You have to do
sales tax returns. Yeah, I've done those. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you are doing bulk, somebody's buying bulk, you know, to resell it to someone else.
There's no tax effect on that.
No, but do you have a copy of their resale?
Nope, you don't need it. You don't need that. Because it's bulk to bulk.
I guess. Yeah, I'm trying to find a...
Well, but your reaction is why I had my original.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I reached out to people that have already gone through it and gotten a decision from the sales tax department.
Okay.
And Charlie, you heard what Greg said, and they didn't have to, so. But they did have to do it on the bag sales.
Okay. Okay. I think
the bags just go to retailers.
I mean, it's certainly the easier way to do it. It is. I mean, otherwise you'd have to... We're turning the office into a...
A little retail shop.
Yeah.
You too can buy your little garbage truck.
How far away from bagging are we, Charlie?
We're still working on our building. Charlie, So let me give it to you this way, right? Angie and I and Tim have discussed taken a certain amount of compost, maybe 100 tons, and like this year, storing it for next year, turning it, keeping it in a dry area. So that would be the material that we bag. So there's not too much moisture in it, and there's not going to be any mold that's growing and stuff like that there. We'd like to keep it, correct me if I'm wrong, Ange, between 30 and 35% moisture, somewhere around there, if it's going to go in the bag. So I did not put any aside. We did put 200 ton aside, and I have to figure out where I want to store this to keep it dry, where I can actually still get into the area with a bobcat and actually still turn it and get some air in between and stuff. So that's where I'm at right now. Uh-huh. So we're just digesting this whole building.
No pun intended.
Yeah. So we're just digesting this whole building, compost, bagging, thing. Right now, my focus is, as you may have heard when we first walked in the room talking to Angie, is this area over here, 22 guys. We only got so much time to get things and so many people. And so I'm focusing on this over here. I have to get some ones and twos and take care of that. And I still have a bunch of other things that I have to do, such as the permit, putting the property on the permit and a stormwater plan and all this other stuff. So we're not there yet. I can, for next year, make sure we have some dry material put aside, probably 100 tons. I think 200 tons would probably be too much, right, Ange?
It's hard to tell, right? We don't know what the demand for this is going to be, what the, you know, the success of it. We're hoping to sell a lot, but it's a whole new world with bag products. So.
Yes, we got 200 tons put aside right now. But it's not in a dry area.
So can I have a question? Is compost combustible?
No, I don't think it is.
I don't know.
No.
I mean, fertilizers are.
No.
So
that's different.
It's different. Okay.
This is just
finished compost is not a very high fire risk, but. Wood chip piles, right, Charlie? I mean, you have to have a fire plan for the.
There have been some places with huge wood chip piles.
Yeah, that's where my brain is going. Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the things that we learned is that, you know, because, you know, rule of thumb, 30 days on the blowers, 30 days off the blowers, screen it and it's for sale. Well, we found out that that's not what we want to do. We've had more success letting it sit longer. So we want it to cook down as much as possible so it's not hot. And there's no heat. So we like to keep it down around, before we even start selling it, you know, right around 70 degrees. If I were going to bag it, I'd want it to be much less than that even. So I just want to make sure that we bag it. We're not going to get complaints because there's nothing wrong with mold. It's a good thing. You know what I mean? But people don't see it that way. So I just want to make sure that there's not going to be any complaints or just try to reduce the complaints. But
maybe we can hop on to that because we have another item that you had brought up with the U.S. Composting Council cards.
Yes.
Does that mention the mold that shows up in the bags or can show up in the bags?
No. It doesn't expressly talk about that. Tim's referring to some soil biology called actinomycetes, which are a filamentous form of bacteria that's naturally occurring in the soil. If you have a compost pile, you may recognize that they look like gray spider webs, kind of like a grayish, whitish material that grows in compost. And it's actually a type of bacteria. And it's part of the soil ecosystem. It's totally normal. But sometimes people see that in the finished compost. They're not aware of what it is, and they have questions about it. So the literature I've seen from the Composting Council doesn't really expressly talk about that, but that's a good question maybe for our FAQ page, you know, or something like that.
With pictures?
That talks about that. So when people have
stuff again?
It's actinomycetes. So some of the most abundant forms of life in the compost are bacteria, fungi, and then actinomycetes is like the ugly stepchild because no one can remember how to say it. But it's a type of bacteria, and it's totally normal. It's part of the soil food web. And, I usually try to explain that.
It almost looks like ash.
It almost looks like ash, but it's a type of life. It's a life form. It's very beneficial to the soil, actually. So.
You know, and there was, and I want to say this just so everybody's clear on it. Angie and I talked about it, because I remember when we first got into compost and the magic number was 4, and I said to Angie, I said to Angie, the number 4 or 3 here, so there's this illusion that compost don't go bad. No, it does, because one of the things So a couple things with compost, right? You want to get the food waste. You got to have enough chips. We always try to keep 800 yards of chips, you know, grinded browns on site. But you also have to have the sales for the compost. The DEC wants you to be able to get rid of it, because after 3 years, you know, it's not alive. Everything dies, you know what I mean? So compost doesn't stay around forever, you know. So 3 years, it's 3 years.
That's, there's nothing on our permit, right, with regards to that?
No. There wouldn't be. No, there wouldn't be nothing on it. But when we first got involved with it, I thought they said 4 years when we first got in, because I know I remember talking to some folks at the DEC, and then Angie, and I said to Angie last, because then I started reading some stuff for 3 years, and I said to Angie, I said, is it 3 years or is it 4 years? And Angie thinks it's three, right, Angie?
Yeah.
So there's some people that think, oh, you know, you can keep it for as long as you want. No, you can't, because like Catherine just said a little earlier, it's not dirt. You know, it's a living thing. So, and that's what makes it so great.
Charlie, do you use the tub grinder to grind up the wood chips?
We don't have a tub grinder. We have a horizontal grinder.
I mean, the
horizontal. So, we use it. We do the yard waste, and we do some stuff for towns, because towns are always having trouble, especially when it comes to money. Each, you know, so to get a guy with a grinder in here, it's like, you know, $6,000 a day, and you pay for the fuel or any damage. So we had a really good deal of $1,500, but some towns that don't even want to pay that. So we've been doing some deals with some towns, some shared services, where they provide. We won't put anybody else on our grinder because, you know, it doesn't take much to do, as you know, Charlie, $20,000-$30,000 worth of damage. These machines, especially Peterson's, are expensive. So we always put our own folks out there, especially Jeff.
Somebody who has some experience on it.
And they watch real careful what they put inside it, because a lot of these towns, they don't watch the pile. Just go dump it over there. And there's all kinds of stuff in it. So we went to one town and it had a 60-pound piece of steel in it. Yeah, it did a lot of damage. Okay. And so we're really careful about that. But we do some shared services. They pay for the fuel, you know, and then they bring us the chips. So we keep it, because we just don't get enough brush in here, you know, to keep our food project going. So we had to come up with some ideas on how we were going to fix that. And to be honest with you, we don't trust anybody else, too. We're not going to take wood chips for free because I don't know what's in it. You know, people grind anything, pressure-treated wood, the sheetrock. You know, when we tell people that we watch every load, you know, from the food waste that comes in, from the wood that's being dumped, you know, and then we grind it, and we watch even when it goes into the grinder, just in case there's something we miss, you know, we really do. So we take it really, really seriously. So we like to, we want to keep that practice going. Because it assures everybody that we're being really, really honest about it, and we put a lot of work into it. So, and that's why it's such a great product. So, that's how we get a lot of the wood chips, Charlie, just by working with the towns, because they don't have money. We need wood chips. We have a grinder, you know, and that's what we do. It's really a great deal for the towns. It's good for us, too, but it's a great deal for the towns. Because you got to remember, all these drop centers, it's free. Just bring it in. Go over there. And people got garbage mixed in with it. I'm not gonna mention any names, but there's this one town that I didn't want to grind because there's all kinds of garbage and stuff mixed in with it. Because nobody watches anything. Car parts, you know, you gotta be careful.
So, for our compost program, it's still very much an educational program, you know, that we need for our. The haulers for anybody who might be using any of our compost and would you say it's educational and it's not really at the point where we're operationalizing it?
I'm not sure I'm following.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to, yeah, because I'm looking at, I'm thinking about the website right now and it seems to be very informative, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, so are we, you know, when are we going to be, you know, at that point, or are we at that point where we are selling, you know, that bulk that you've left, you know, you've dried and...
That's what we've been doing since 2012.
I know that we've been doing it, but, you know, are we doing it, and we're going to... Okay, I guess let me rephrase.
We have a shortage of food waste.
So
therefore, we have a shortage of compost. Probably the food waste we're spending money on to send it to the Seneca Meadows because it's just in with the garbage.
I mean, we've got, you know, Angie has her program that at some point we're going to get a chance, hopefully, unless we go backwards on this whole COVID thing again.
What school it might be.
My kids' camp got notified that they had to do contact tracing, so it's like, I don't know where, there's no issues, my kids are fine, but my point is if we go backwards again, because she has the business tutor program that she wanted to roll out to help teach businesses to start doing it. We've had the discussion, and we've spec'd out the food waste trailers, and we've spoken to the towns to be able to, it was that gap, right, that we discussed between the two laws, the county law and the state law, the section that we were missing to where we could put it out to the towns to where it would be a drop-off point for some of the towns as sort of a pilot project so we could get more in.
Similar to what's happened, what Westchester was doing.
Yeah, it was. Is that what Scarsdale is?
Yeah, Scarsdale.
Drop off there.
Yeah.
But ultimately, and all this stuff is good. And we talked about festivals and, and working with those. But the big nut that you're gonna have to crack, I feel like at some point. And I understand that there's the law out there for the large generators. But if we could get to the schools, but ultimately, the haulers, the big haulers. I don't know how you crack that. That nut ultimately, right, Charlie? I don't see them putting
it. It's really tough because you know when you logistics. You know Kingston. There's a lot of restaurants that are pretty close together. You know Woodstock, not so. Sorties have some stuff, but not you know. And I mean that's where you know a lot of people. They're like, there's not a big savings with it because you know they're so far apart. It's not like going through Bishop's Gates with a garbage truck. You know what I mean? You got 1,000 cans. That's you know you're driving a long distance to get this, and you have to pay for that service. A lot of people are saying, well, you know what? I got a 40-yard container, and when the guy comes once a week with his front loader, I still have a yard of capacity left. You know, what am I saving? Why would I pay for this extra service? You know, and you can't answer the question because there's not a savings. You know, you have to do it because it's the right thing. So that's the challenge. It's, you know, it's that's why a lot of haulers are not at this point getting into collecting food waste. Yeah. Before 2012, when we did our when we started our compost, I had a bunch of haulers coming to me. Oh, when are you guys gonna do food waste? When are you guys gonna do food waste? And I'm like, you know, it's something we're talking about, something we're talking about. And then we finally decided to do it. But when we put it in place, everybody's like, yeah, we're not going to do that. You know, there's just no money in it. Nobody wants to do it. It's too far away. It's too spread apart. And so then we were left scrambling to try to get it wherever we can. Places like, good places like that really care, that do it, for, you know, for the reason. Places like the Omega, you know, those places are really good. The schools, you know, like New Falls and stuff. But, you know, to get it into the restaurants and stuff, and I know we have a law coming, it's going to be a challenge. And it's going to have to be, there's going to be some kind of enforcement in place, right, Ange?
And the enforcement like is through the county.
The Board of Health, I guess, right?
It's supposed to be the county, yeah.
Yeah.
And just to add on to what you were saying, Charlie, when, you know, when the DEC, for example, has webinars or informational memos about this law, you know, we have communication with the haulers to pass on that information just to kind of give them a nudge and keep them informed. Hey, this is what's going on at the state level. And that's one small way that we are trying to encourage them to stay up to date on the law and, you know, encourage them that the future of recycling is in organics. So I forwarded a lot of emails, a lot of webinar conference information. That's the extent really of what we can do is just provide them with the information. Look, this is what's coming down the line. You know, join us and be a part of it. But I don't get a lot of replies to those emails, honestly, but I do try to forward the information on.
I mean, we had discussions with Amanda and Angela, bits and pieces come to mind, so you might have to help me out with this, Timmy, too. We had talked with Amanda LaValle, where we talked about different grants that would, actually pay for the cost of tipping food waste to incentivize people to do it. So, so there's, let's say, $100,000, and so the food waste is $20 a ton. So this is how many tons that $100,000 would pay for coming across your scale. So these restaurants wouldn't have to pay the tipping fee just to incentivize people to, you know, to recycle their food waste. You remember that, right? That we had talked.
talks about stuff like that. I mean, it didn't happen. I think it will at some point in time. There's a lot of money in that kind of stuff. We just, we're not there yet, and we can't offer that type of thing. But I think that's going to help when you can do those kind of things to eliminate. You know, when we first got into the compost, I said to myself very early on, I said, you know what, even if we had a zero tipping fee, without any grants or anything, it's still a challenge. Because the haulers want to get paid to pick it up. And, you know, there's got to be a bottom line. So it's really, really a challenge. We went from $30 down to 30, right, down to 20, Tim, on the food waste when we first started off.
We started at 50, right, to 30.
I don't remember. We did the sale where we cut it in half that one year because we couldn't sell anything.
No, I'm talking about the food waste.
I thought we dropped to $10.
Yeah, so. From 30 to down to 20. Yeah. We did get some food waste in, you know, but still, it comes down to the container. If you have room left in the container.
I did hear on the radio that, I'm not sure if it's Albany County or Albany City, it's probably the county, has got some sort of food waste program. And I remember them hearing them say that there were three ways for residents to actually get their food waste to be recycled. But I don't remember what they were, if they told me what they were in this radio bulletin or whatever it was. But anyway, we might talk to Albany County and try to find out. They must have enacted their law this year and put it into functioning.
In Albany, there's a center called the Radix Center.
Yeah.
It's an education center, and they have greenhouses, and they do farming things. So I think I'm familiar with the program, and it's, you know, those options are backyard composting in your own home, bring it to a drop-off center, or have a private company come and pick it up at your home.
Right. Yeah.
And those are the widespread. Those are the options.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can present that information, but then people have to decide.
They have to do it. Yeah.
And have access to go and do it.
I think it's Albany County because there's a big hauler that actually came back. He had a big business, and then he sold it and he came back. And he's really out there. He's very aggressive. And from last time I heard, and he's up in the Capital District, he had purchased a lot of equipment to do the collection of food waste. So I think it's Albany. I think it's Albany County.
Yeah.
You know, I think about that. Now they connect the dots a little bit on that.
Scarsdale, though, has that where people go and who hauls that up here?
American Transport.
So they don't have a service route in Ulster County.
They have a container that they collect it in. It's almost like a drop center.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm thinking. Maybe that's the way to, you know, do drop centers at the transfer stations.
We don't call them transfer stations here. Well, that was the idea. A lot of places are rural. They get pillars and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's the whole trailer concept. We've been distracted from all these other things that are wasting our time going on. And I started doing it, and I haven't gotten it.
Okay. Anything else we need on this compost?
Yeah, sometimes we get certain questions and that I think maybe we should formalize with board's approval. We get people who ask us, we've always told them no, to reserve, you know, hold compost for them. I'll be there tomorrow or whatever. And we've always told them no. I think that's something we should drop in the policy just to, you know, to have your approval, so there's something.
So is your recommendation
first come, first serve? That's how we've always operated. Like I said, I just want to formalize that and make sure that the board is just in agreement with how we've always done things. The other thing was donations of compost, right, Ange? You said you've gotten that request.
Yeah, we often got phone calls from different. Maybe a garden or a nonprofit group or groups from Westchester where their food scraps come here and we transform it into compost, and then they would like to go and give it away to people for free, and they're wondering if we would donate it to their cause or their project. And that's always been our policy that we don't donate compost for any purpose.
We don't donate anything.
We don't donate anything for any purpose. So it'd be great if there's an opportunity to include that in a policy. The only exception I can think of with that is sometimes people would like a small sample of the compost, right? So a gardener may come in or a farmer may come in and they might have aspirations to buy a lot more. And they might say, you know, I just want to see what it looks like. So the only exception to that, right, Tim, is if we give like a half gallon bag, a sample of what the compost looks like, or if we go, we went to a conference once where I passed out small samples for people to, you know, to bring home and try. So like a sample is the only exception to that. But this question does come up, you know, a couple times a year that people want a free donation or, you know, a load, and we've always declined that.
Because that's just in line with what our general policy is that we don't make any donations. Because you don't want to be, you know, make it seem like you're hand-picking one over the other. That was the concept when they passed that policy.
And what would we have been donating prior to having a product?
Oh, what came up? I think it might have been the nickel cans.
Oh.
It might have been where that stemmed from, if I recall.
Oh, okay.
It was about 10 years ago.
You're talking about the towns?
Yeah, and I think the towns ended up separating it.
Well, that's
contract, too. Yeah, but it was the Boy Scouts and the nickel cans, I think, is where that discussion started from.
Oh, okay, okay.
Well, that was a contractual, though.
It ended up becoming contractual.
And it goes right with the scrap. When we first started doing this with the towns, these drop-off centers, you know, we picked up everything. And then the towns are like, well, we're not making no money, you know, so we want to be able to keep the scrap metal. So they ended up keeping the scrap metal. And then it went on to the Goya cans, which we said no to. And then, you know, and then it went on to the nickel deposits and the Boy Scouts.
That is what it was. And then and the way that the towns ended up handling that themselves, because the Boy Scouts wanted us to donate cans that we got here. And we were like, well, we're not going to donate anything. But then the towns ended up doing something where... And we, from a contractual standpoint, we told them they could keep the nickel deposits.
Because if we didn't, they were going to do it anyway. You know, we would go in there and they'd be pulling them out anyway. You know, it's like, hey, there's no cans at all in the co-mingle, and it's because they're taking them away. So, there's, you know, you can't change the flow of the stream. You just got to go with it.
Because our contracts, you know, also state that, you know, the recycling that they collect comes to us. So, we have to stipulate in there that if they keep something like the metal or the nickels, it's got to be in the contract. But that's where that came from.
Because sometimes we're also taking the Goya cans and throwing them into a metal box. And he said, no, you can't do that. So and then they were like, well, what about the
Goya's steel cans, right?
Yeah, I love Goya.
This doesn't sound like a safe practice anyway, to be reaching into these 10 to 40 cubic yard containers to pull out cans for 5 cents. Sounds a little dangerous.
Well, some of them have like these big, like, screens that they, you know, where they dump the co-mingle on and they fish and then they just tip it into the thing, you know, into the box, you know, so they'll have people put their co-mingle, I think New Pulse does, and I think maybe Worsing does it, where they spread it out and then they take their nickel deposits out and then they just flip it up into the air and it goes into the box, and so that's how they do it.
One of the other items, and we already hit on already, was the distribution of the U.S. Composting Council cards. Mm-hmm. Once again, we're just talking about formalizing, you know, handing out, distributing that information when people purchase the compost. Mortality composting.
Okay. I guess that's my idea of, you know, this is educational too.
Yeah, the rec cards are very educational because they talk about the benefits of using the compost and talks about suggested ways to use the compost, how to mix it with your garden soil, you know, how many inches, what proportions. So that's really important, and we distribute that with every sale.
Okay. And then something that Charlie can probably confirm this, because I believe it's on our permit. I know it's on our permit about taking the deer carcass, but our mortality composting can't be sold to the public. I mean, is that part of our permit that we can't sell? We can use it around here?
It doesn't say that we can't. You know, that was a discussion. The DEC frowns on it. They did let us do it.
Someone at the door, but I don't know if the door is locked.
They did let us
probably
do it.
Is locked.
Oh. Okay.
They did let us do it, and then we had an inspection, and we were there and looking at everything. And we're like, yeah, you know, we don't know if we like that anymore. We'd rather not have you sell the deer compost. Maybe just use it around your place for landscaping, you know. So
it's in a separate bay. So once again, I think we just formalize the fact that we don't sell that.
We don't
it's always
sell
nice
it.
To have that type of backup for us.
Our permit does give us a limit on how much deer we can take, you know, on a per ton basis, so.
And then the quantities of sales, we've been, we went through an instance this year where we limited to essentially a bucket load. So I think as a board, as part of our policy, we need to, we have a couple decisions we probably should think about. Should we do that, and when does it kick in? Should we do it all the time? What's the limit going to be? Should there be instances where, I don't know, where we say it's at management's discretion to set a limit? So I'd like to formalize that into a policy that you all agree on as well. Because my bigger concern still goes back to the people pulling, you know, the 30-ton loads out of here and not leaving anything for everybody else.
Yeah, right.
Because we had an instance last fall where we had, you know, a customer take out 30-ton one morning and there was nothing left, and then we got phone calls demanding 1,000 more ton, and then I'm getting phone calls from the legislators telling us to do it, and it's just, it's
yeah, I think
now they're complaining about us, and it's like,
we just had someone on the tour this morning. We hosted a tour for the Ulster County Garden Club Association, and that was one of the questions that we got from them was, you know, that people would come and buy huge loads of the compost, and then an average gardener, you know, couldn't have access to it. And of course, I talked to them about bagging and how we hope to make it more available, you know, for small scale customers that way. But that's, it does come up a lot.
Yeah, and I know that was one of the things in Tom's email. It was here that he stressed about keeping it smaller. So he's probably would prefer that. But that's,
yeah, and I actually think that you guys are doing this as a service to our residents. That's what we should do. We should limit. So a bucket load is roughly how much?
2 to 1, right? So say 4.5. I mean, it all depends on moisture, making it heavier.
Uh-huh.
It does depend on that.
Yeah, but if it's the big loader, because we had an L60, which was smaller loads. But the 950 has a 9-yard bucket, so.
That's right.
We did get the L110 down there. So it's a 9-yard bucket, so a rough estimate is 4.5 tons of load. But so when I draft a formal policy, if that's the general consensus, obviously we can edit it before we finalize anything.
Uh-huh.
But that's what I'll go with when I initially draft the policy then. And then the question is do you do multiple on the day? Do you limit somebody to one load a day? And that's something that should be considered. But then it's like you do that, and then you end up with a situation we had, what, like 4 years ago, to where we didn't move enough of it. You're constantly chasing your tail, you know.
Okay. You know, so
people are playing Monday morning quarterback.
I think the sentiments is that, you know, you want it spread out, right, throughout the county.
No pun intended.
So people, so the people, sorry, the garden clubs and the farmers and stuff, right, you know, have the compost coming to them, so. I think that, first of all, you know, when Tim says a bucket, he said something earlier, he said it depends on the weight, you know, so sometimes, you know, a bucket could be heavier
or lighter.
So, people shouldn't really focus on trying to average that out, because it could be really, really light, really dry. We've had those times, right, Ange? And we've had it, you know, we try to keep it's nice to keep the moisture right around 40%, but it's out, everything's exposed to the weather. So we don't have that luxury of regulating the moisture as well as we'd like to. So one bucket of load, you know, going out. And I think the most important thing is that, you know, 65-yard dump trailers or you know, 10-yarders or 10-wheelers or 12-wheeler dump trucks and stuff. I had a guy just left a voicemail that wanted 160-ton. When can I come get it? You can't, you know. So it's really up to what you folks want to do. It really, really is. I mean, you know, if the message is to spread it out, you know, I mean, rather than saying yes or no on the phone, on the website, first come, first serve,
one bucket per day, one bucket per
day. That's your suggestion.
Yeah.
We can consider that. Like I said, it's everything's always seems to be a catch-22. You make a decision one way, and then it's somebody
else. Well, I mean, I think that, yeah, we can always say subject to change, but the change has to be reasonable so that we're not, we are not preferencing any anybody or any business.
Showing favoritism is what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't want it, yeah.
Right. You got to be careful of that.
But here's the thing, anybody can say whatever they want.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And it doesn't, so we right now we've had this one guy come in, and he's buying quite a bit of compost, and he's a landscaper. So he's an Ulster County business guy landscaper, and he's using the product for several jobs. So if, you know, if you say you can only come in one time, that means he can't start three jobs at once. He's got to wait until the next day to start another job, so because he's got crews out to many jobs. So it's whatever you folks want to do. Either way, somebody's going to complain.
Because there's favoritism outside this place,
yeah,
too. it works both ways.
No, I realize that. So how can we be
my biggest problem,
Solomon, basically?
My biggest problem is we're trying to fix something that's not broken, truthfully. I mean, there are other people that think differently.
One of the things I found out, because when you deal with a quote-unquote perception issue, which I think is really the issue.
Mm-hmm.
You realize there's a perception issue, but then you got to look at, is there really an issue?
Mm-hmm.
Is there really an issue? What I found is, on our end, for a month here, there was a communication issue. Because we were getting phone calls that we later found out were kind of setups. And we have about 5 people in here getting phone calls and calling down and speaking to 4 different people as to whether or not we have compost. And then we find out later on, right, there's somebody down there, you know, who's might be saying the wrong thing in order to catch somebody else. It's setting them up.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of nonsense going on that I was able to find out through some inquiries and investigating. So
if we have a policy that everybody says, you know.
A procedure.
Yeah.
So one of the big things that we've done in the last month plus was bringing Larry Rickey on board. Because there's stuff with regards to our permit, like taking temperatures and everything. Compliance logs, no different than the transfer station.
Can he come to our board meeting so we can all meet him, too?
He was at the one and last couple ones, because he's retired, too, so he's a part-time employee.
Okay.
So he's got a house down in New Jersey, a house in Florida, so
Sometimes
he's away. So the last two times he could not make the board meeting,
okay.
But I did ask him to come to the board meeting,
okay.
Just so you folks know that.
So from a procedural standpoint, what we're going to start doing is he's basically going to start overseeing the compost from a compliance standpoint. And we're going to log certain things. So instead of relying on phone calls in here, phone calls down there,
mm-hmm.
right, we're going to be able to actually document what's down there, send it up with the paperwork so that we know and it's on paper.
Yeah.
Because, it's the compost, from a procedural standpoint, it worked
mm-hmm.
as far as we knew. When you realize something doesn't work, that's when you make the change.
Yeah.
There's no hindsight around here.
You know, and Joanne, some of the things that Tim just cited that was the problem of, you know, on the phone, people calling up just to try to set things up mm-hmm. and down there, people had some ulterior motives. You know, let's not forget, you know, and I know you folks don't know this, but it's true. I mean, I can't tell you how many times Tim came down to my office and it was like we were personally, ourselves, going back there to look to see how much, because it was like 4 different messages on how much compost we had and whether we had it. So he's not getting nothing done. I'm not getting done. We're going back there. So now Larry is actually going to bridge that gap.
Yeah. And if we actually have a policy process that is everybody's adhering to.
Correct.
Okay. That works. For me, any?
I don't think it should be limited to 1 load a day for collector, or whoever.
Why? I mean, so can somebody who comes in, you know,
okay, it's time for me to deal with my garden. I have a pickup truck.
Uh-huh.
So I come here, they load it up, I weigh, I pay, and I go home. I toss it into my garden, and I come back. You know, I mean,
so
it's easier for me to do more truckloads on one day than it is to fart around and come several different days from my point of view, for my garden. It's gardening time. That would be my
It's all about availability.
Yeah, it's availability and making sure that everybody has access. I'm sorry that I'm not visualizing this correctly. A bucket load into a normal pickup truck
would be,
oh, I don't think I could take 4.5.
2 cubic yards, maybe? Yeah. Less than 2 cubic yards?
Yeah, so so at that point, you know, if you've only taken, like, half a load, you can, I think that, you know, the issue.
Was way too much calculation. We don't keep track.
Okay, I that's what I'm saying. It's, yeah, could we calculate, you know, like
first,
that?
It should be just first come, first serve. No, you know, it should be first some, you know, not selling it for people in bulk quantities for people to resell the compost at $75 a yard because they're getting that 15. That's really where the focus really should stay. Us to keep track of who's taking what or how much, the landscapers coming in, it's way too much time. And food waste is down 60%.
We've sold 1,000 tons.
Yeah. What?
We've only sold 1,000
tons. I know, I know. So I'm
beating our brains in over something that's immaterial.
And, you know, listen, I want to remind Joanne and Charlie and Catherine that, you know, don't forget, it's also budget time, too. So I don't even know what Tim and I didn't even talk about what the food waste is going to be and how much the compost is going to be selling. I know there's some things going up in the budget. So, keep that in mind also.
Because it doesn't really matter.
What's that?
I do it last because it doesn't really matter. It's less than 0.5% of my budget.
Yeah, if we're only selling 1,000 tons.
You may not get everybody running in here, you know, because it's 15 a yard, maybe 20 a yard.
For sure.
So you may not have people want to say, oh, well, you know what, I'll just whip the lows and get, I don't know. It's not gonna forever be $15 a yard. Everything goes up. So I don't know what Tim's thinking, and we can now discuss it, but, you know, this could be a moot point at some point in time because we're going to be raising prices. If we do.
The other thing about the income is if we're selling it for $20 a ton, when the food waste comes in, we're getting $20 a ton for that. When the yard waste comes in, we're getting $40 a ton for that. So when you figure it out, we get $30 of income when it comes in as waste, and then we get $20 of income when we sell out a ton of the compost. So now it's $50 income. And the other part that we can't figure into the equation is the $67 a ton that we're saving because it's not going to the landfill.
Yeah. And the
gas. So the whole business about the price is crazy.
Yeah, so I think that's from talking about perception, we need to basically be telling people that if we are saving X amount of tons from being transported, we're actually saving $67 per ton. And I think that's the message.
Angie did a wonderful job, you know, putting together the emissions and the greenhouse gases and right, and nobody, you know, listen, nobody cares. I mean, you folks do. I'm not talking about you guys.
Europa does. Europa liked it.
What I want to reflect on, too, is that there is a cost to conducting this program.
Yeah.
You know, when we're talking about $20 for this, $40 for that, that's not just profit, right? There's facility upgrades, there's staff time, there's wear and tear on equipment, there's, you know, a lot of overhead that goes into it, too.
Right.
Because people, I'm a little sensitive to it, because people have this perception that, like, recycling is free and it should be free. People have a perception that dropping off your food scraps should be a free service everywhere, and there's a real solid cost to all of these things.
I'm putting my zero waste hat on. That's something that we need to, the zero waste committee needs to get into their brains.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with you.
At some point, maybe you and I need to sit and try to figure out how we message that.
Yeah, if there's a perception that recycling and composting is free for us, it's false. There's tremendous overhead and costs that pour into it, and that's not why we're doing this program. It's the environmental benefits. Yeah. It's the 12 trips around the surface of the earth that we've avoided by doing this program. And all the greenhouse gas impacts. And
so the 12 times around the planet, there's this much food waste that we're recycling, right? And then take into account as well, 1% of our volume, Ken, our business, Tim, you know. So we're spending all this time on compost. It's like 1% of our business. And what we do recycles like 12 times around the planet. So I don't understand. This whole thing is baffling, I mean, to be quite honest with you. You know, somebody has made a no question about it, a mountain out of a molehill.
It's not a rigid science, Charlie.
Yeah, it all started with a part-time ex-employee,
yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, let's move forward and not keep on rehashing that. Let us move forward and do it so that we can, it makes sense, and we can get the message out to people that, you know, it's an environmental benefit that we're looking at to go to zero waste or whatever we're doing.
That's what they should have been looking at, Joanne.
I mean, I feel like at the ZWIP meeting, that's all I'm saying. I feel like a broken record.
Well, and two, we've had, what is it, three different entities yesterday toward?
Four, actually.
looking into starting their own programs.
Uh-huh.
So the more places there are that start, the more programs, the more product there's going to be all
and
around.
And then competition.
Right,
yeah.
Which is if, you know, when New York State can get on the path that it wants to with regards to its Beyond Waste plan or Zero Waste, as you say, in this county, you're not going to be dealing with this issue.
Yeah.
Listen, and the people that were here yesterday that want to start these programs, I mean, they raved about our site, you know, and how well it's taken care of and the product that we make, you know. Somebody had talked about good press, you know, bringing somebody in, you know. So, listen, it was a really, really positive event.
Yeah, we had some engineers from, you know, we had another RRA from out of state. People come from all over the region to see the model program that we have and to try to replicate it. You know,
and
something
DEC is always
so proud of. It was a really great tour. Everyone was astounded, especially heavy rain and everything that we've had. I mean, Charlie, you work really hard at making sure that site is where it needs to be and things are dealt with in a sanitary way. And they were all very impressed, which makes us feel good when we have so much bad press going on. So good job there.
Yeah.
But you don't need my congratulations. Yeah. But everyone knows it.
And listen, just budgeting alone, right, and the in-house concrete work, you know, the same person that's being crucified, you know, does all this concrete work in this compost area. And, you know, so it's just baffling that none of these positive things are ever looked at and there's never no good press about it. You know what I mean? It's all, you know, but I get it, right? It's the house fire that sells newspapers, you know, not the birth of a triplets. So I get it.
Yeah.
Sad.
So I'll put something together.
Okay. And Angie, can you and I at some point talk whenever you have
you know
time
to find me?
Yeah,
stop by. I would love to hear more about, you know, how everything's going with that. And, you know, I know you've been going very religiously. And,
it's like every Thursday morning.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It is. It's like 8:30 in the morning. Sometimes. But, I mean, I think Europa does wonderful work. And she sings your praises.
She's great to work with.
Yeah, she sings
we
your
have
praises.
A great relationship. Yeah.
All the time.
Okay,
yeah.
Talk to you.
Europa?
Yeah, isn't that
I'll
a cool
have
name?
On Monday.
It was the name of one of my cars.
Yeah.
I had a broken car.
Okay, I'll see you
Take
Monday.
Care.
Right? Monday, Charlie?
Mm-hmm. Monday lunch. Sorry.
Monday
yes,
lunch.
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, since we seem to be wrapping it up a little.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie just voted with his feet, but he's not part of the committee, so may I entertain a motion?
I would propose a motion that we adjourn the meeting.
And I will second that, and we will vote with our feet.
Excellent.
Okay.
Okay, progress.
Did we cover everything that everybody needed covering before I now adjourn them?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
No one called in on our...
There was no call in.